Views expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of this station, its management, or other advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.
This show's audio was via a Skype call.
Get fired up for Spirit Fire Radio with your hosts, Dorothy Riddle and Steve Kramer. Get ready to shine the light on universal spiritual principles and uncover ways that ageless wisdom can guide you in cultivating consciousness in these modern times. Bring purpose to your life through practical spirituality and add to your awareness with Spirit Fire Radio. Now, here are your hosts, Dorothy Riddle and Steve Kramer.
Hello, listeners. Welcome to Spirit Fire Radio. My name is Steve Kramer, and I'm joined by my co-host, Dr. Dorothy Riddle. Hello, Dorothy.
Hi, Steve. Glad to be here today.
Wonderful to be with you as well. So we're going to continue our conversation on cooperation. We're spending the entire month of November talking about cooperation, and today specifically the ways in which cooperation is similar to altruism and self-interest, the ways in which those are embodied, altruism and self-interest, within cooperation as a concept. So I look forward to that. And Dorothy, you know, this is Thanksgiving week, right? Tomorrow is Thanksgiving,
yes.
At least in the United States. I know you are in Canada. You've already had Thanksgiving a month ago. But, you know, it's interesting because we think of Thanksgiving, right, as being a holiday all about cooperation, right?
Yes.
Certainly, as so many people join up with family members that they may not have seen in a long time, cooperation is really, really important so that everything goes really smooth. But one thing I wanted to bring up, which I find interesting, is that if you think about it, Thanksgiving is really an immigrant story. And, you know, we think of the situation today, we often have talked about the plight of immigrants and some of the political maneuvering that's happening these days that doesn't feel so cooperative. And I would hope that this week and during this holiday, people would at least consider that Thanksgiving really is a holiday all about tolerance and compassion, the communal table. You know, for those of you who may not really might be scratching your head, what? Well, it was the result of a very harsh winter, reportedly 1620, when the colonists found themselves in a stitch because it was a very harsh winter. As I look out my window, it's basically looks like winter now in November. I mean, there's snow on the ground. It is harsh. And the Native Americans helped them through that winter. And then that next coming autumn in the harvest season, the colonists kindly invited them to a feast as a thank you. And that went on every year as a tradition. So I just find it so interesting, right, Dorothy, that, you know, that we really see this pushback, whereas it is the Americans who really were the original immigrants that were welcomed by those who were native to this country. And we seem to forget that, huh?
Absolutely. Well, actually, I'd like to add one other thing, Steve, because I was I took a look at the history of Thanksgiving, and while its origins are as you detailed, it didn't become a national holiday until President Lincoln declared it so. And he declared it so in the midst of the Civil War as a time to pause and give thanks, even though things were so difficult. So that's another window into what this holiday is about.
Yeah, another layer of seeing the you know, the benefits of diversity and coming together and finding that what you have in common, that what you have to be thankful for. So may it be so this week that we all reflect on that and give thanks for the other and find ways to cooperate. So, Dorothy, how about a quote, I would imagine, yes, for today?
Yes, I have two that I'd like to share, Steve. The first is from Mahatma Gandhi. He wrote, "Non-cooperation with evil is as much a duty as cooperation with good." So in other words, it's not just working together with those that are like-minded, but also standing in opposition to evil and not cooperating with evil is as important. So that's one. And the other is from Albert Einstein. He wrote, "We are here for the sake of others, above all for those upon whose smile and well-being our own happiness depends, for the countless unknown souls with whose fate we are connected by a bond of sympathy." And I just want to mention, you know, we've been going through periods of terrible devastations. We've had hurricane after hurricane, and now we have the wildfires and their aftermath in California. Thousands of people uprooted and homeless because of all of this happening. And those unknown souls are part of the people for whose well-being we want to cooperate and work together.
And it offers a wonderful opportunity, you know, to practice generosity and cooperation. When you think about these people whose entire lives are ash. You know, I mean, with a hurricane or a flood, you can at least salvage something that at least there's a memory attached to it. There's a bit of time. But in this, so many of these situations with these people, I mean, entire towns wiped out. The images are just so shocking to think that everything you own is gone. And you saw, I saw in the news an image of a center where people were able to get access to records, you know, government records, access to low interest loans, basically just start here to start rebuilding. But there are so many ways in which you can contribute by sending clothes, by sending, you know, they've got stations set up for people who'd like to donate either money, but a wonderful opportunity, right, to cooperate with those who really, as you say, are so in need right now. Yeah.
And incredible stories of cooperation in the midst of disaster.
Yes.
Of strangers helping strangers. Just really, really heartwarming. And, you know, I think that leads us into the first topic that we want to focus on. You know, when do we cooperate? You know, what activates that sense of cooperation? And, of course, facing danger where it's critical that we can't do it ourselves. We have to have help. Or we're in a position where we are able to help someone else who clearly can't help help themselves. That is one of the triggers, I think, for cooperation.
And when you sense that need, that someone needs to lean upon you, you know, they need a shoulder to lean on, it is, you know, just that capacity to allow that and to embrace another. That is just such a simple form of cooperation, you know, in any way, if it's just compassion or physical support, a physical hug. Mm-hmm. You know, you think how cooperative a hug is, that someone leans into you, you open your arms, you receive them, you hug them, you become one in a sense. You know, it is a beautiful sentiment, something so simple as a hug and so cooperative, right?
Yes. Yeah. I think there's another dynamic that, you know, is very real and alive right now. I mean, it operates in our lives in a number of different ways, but in times of emergency, it's really clear. And that is that we cooperate, or we have a choice to cooperate when there are limited resources.
Yeah.
When everyone doesn't have plenty, then we have choices that we can make. We can choose to behave selfishly, to hoard, you know, to take what we can get, or we can choose to share. We can choose to, instead of seeing it as a pie with just so many slices, we can think of ways of expanding the pie. You know, how do we take what is available and stretch it so that even more people can benefit? So I think that's another time when we have the choice, or another condition when we have the choice to cooperate.
But there's a bit of self-awareness going on there. You know, I'm hearing as you say those words that it does take a bit of awareness to be able to sense what another needs and be able to see that, I've got plenty, you know, I've got much to give. And even if I feel that I don't, I will find it. Or, you know, I can see where there is a need. You know, it awareness is a big part of that. You know, we can sense that we cooperate when we need something, you know, from that aspect. Like, I need something, I'm going to cooperate as long as I can get what it is that I need. You tell me what the conditions are and I will cooperate. But being on the other end and cooperating so that someone may receive, you know, is a beautiful, beautiful thing.
Well, it's interesting that oftentimes that awareness, in my experience, comes about not because we have, we experience ourselves as having abundance, but because we are aware that we ourselves are operating under constraints, and we see that somebody else is also operating under constraints, and we reach out. I'd like to share a story, Steve. I may have shared it last year on the show, but it's always stayed with me. My mother was a nutritionist, and she worked on issues of world hunger, and she worked particularly in the United States in Appalachian areas. And she was responsible for an event at the White House related to hunger, where they had they had meetings, they had speakers, and then people came in for lunch. And she had arranged it so that every plate had a roll on it, you know, a side plate. And then every third one also had a salad. And then every third had a full meal. And what was interesting, she reported, was that the people who had a full meal just started eating. They assumed that the food would be coming along for the other people.
Yeah.
Whereas the people who had the roll and the salad started sharing their salad with the people that had only the roll. So it was the ones that had less that were actually reaching out in cooperation to share with each other. And then, of course, you know, her role as facilitator was to debrief that all and help people see what the dynamics were, but that's always stayed with me.
Very interesting. It really illustrates the point you were just saying, that we connect with another. We sense the need in ourselves. We see it in another, and then we come together, right, in cooperation to see how we might serve each other. And then abundance seems to appear because as we've said so many times, there just intrinsically is enough for us all, right?
It depends in large part on how we define it, right?
Yeah.
If you think that abundance is a 10-course meal and you have a 5-course meal, then you can feel like you don't have enough. But if you define enough as being anything at all to eat, then a 5-course meal is going to seem really abundant.
Yeah, yeah. Dorothy, we're already at our first break. I love that we're talking about meals and food on Thanksgiving week. We're going to go to a break and we'll be right back.
please join us for a transformational conference with five, that's right, five of the leading pioneers in the fields of science and spirituality, all in one place. Join best-selling authors and teachers Greg Braden, Dr. Bruce Lipton, Lynn McTaggart, Dr. Joe Dispenza, and Lee Carroll in both individual workshops as well as a weekend of keynote presentations and panel discussions. At this extraordinary event, you'll get to experience some of the brightest leaders of our world today, empowering you with groundbreaking new information, deep wisdom, and practical tools to transform your life. Come connect with others and expand your consciousness in beautiful Nanaimo on Vancouver Island in British Columbia, June 14th through 19th. For more information or to register for what some are expecting to be one of the best conferences of 2018, visit shalohaproductions.com. That's S-H-A-L-O-H-A productions.com. Or visit the individual speakers' websites.
Conscious Confidence Radio, a timeless wisdom with Sarah Maine. Tune in each month on Transformation Talk Radio and join Sarah on an adventurous journey to the deeper level of meaning to move beyond today's world of constant change, confusion, and uncertainty beyond the shadow of fear. This hit show explores key concepts such as confidence, values, and attitude in a dynamic way. To learn more about Sarah and her work, visit sarahmaine.com.
Stay juicy. Tune in to Your Juicy Love with me, Una Drake, co-hosting monthly with Dr. Pat, and every second Monday at 12 p.m. on Transformation Talk Radio. My show, Your Juicy Love, helps you find the dynamic, life-affirming love you've always wanted. Transform your relationships and bring peace, joy, and juicy, juicy love to planet Earth. For more information, visit unadrake.com.
Hello, listeners. Welcome back to Spirit Fire Radio. Dorothy and I always like to take a moment to talk about our respective educational nonprofits that, in fact, brought us together in this co-creative, cooperative endeavor that is Spirit Fire Radio. Dorothy, would you like to lead and tell our listeners a bit about the School for Esoteric Studies?
Absolutely. Listeners, the School for Esoteric Studies, as Steve mentioned, is an educational nonprofit. Our focus is on providing training for persons who have a spiritual practice that they would like to deepen. And you can find out more about that at esotericstudies.net. We also have a number of group initiatives. Our newest, which I would invite you to join us in, is a series of white papers on inclusive social action, where we take a look at and try to stimulate dialogue about how it is that we say no, that we do not cooperate with evil, with harm that's being done, in a way that does not create further divisiveness. So there is on our website, esotericstudies.net, you'll find right there on the homepage a link to our first white paper on inclusive social action, and we are looking for collaborators, people who would like to cooperate with us in further developing strategies that do not create divisiveness, but clearly say this is not acceptable when harm is being generated. So again, esotericstudies.net.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Dorothy, and so much wonderful material on that website. So listeners, by all means, give it a look. And I am here on behalf of Spirit Fire, which is an educational nonprofit as well. We are focused on meditation, study, and service. We do that through our own meditation practice, the practice of living awareness. It's an online meditation practice, totally free. You can check that out on our website. Just go to spiritfire.com and look under meditation. We've got a meditation center in Western Massachusetts, and we often hold meditation retreats that support that practice and many other practices as well. We do online classes and really here to educate people on the importance of spirituality in their everyday life, taking the meditative quality off the cushion and putting it into your life. Mindfulness, it serves us all, not unlike harmlessness. So, Dorothy, I wanted to just bring up in that you made reference once again to non-cooperation with evil. Was that quote by Mahatma Gandhi, you know, that is really just as important as learning to cooperate with goodness. And I was wondering, you know, we were talking about when do we cooperate or even why do we cooperate? And it's so interesting. I find these days so many people questioning how so many people can be cooperating with such divisiveness. You know, we see divisiveness everywhere, especially within the political spectrum in the States. And so many people jumping on board and seeming to cooperate with something that feels, at least to many watching it from the outside, as so harmful and dark and separative. And you say, well, why is there so much cooperation within that circle? And I just was pondering that, you know, that when do we cooperate with evil? And I was wondering if you had any thoughts. You know, for me, I was thinking that often evil is so centered in power, in self-centered power. It feels like a tangible force, and it's almost like it's just easier to go with it, you know, because in order to stand up and to say no requires to meet that force with an equal force that will stand firmly in one's ground and say absolutely not. And I wondered if you feel like it's almost as if there's, you know, there's this momentum to that force that feels evil, and it just collects by people just being magnetized to it and not meeting the force with an opposite force. Any thoughts on that?
Well, I think the to me what I go back to is a lack of awareness of the many, many ways in which we harm each other and we harm ourselves. So we develop a kind of numbness to the dynamic. And right now, at least in the United States, in the political arena, there are so many directions in which this is happening that it's difficult to be attentive and say, this is not okay. The underlying dynamic to me, Steve, is seeing someone as the other. As soon as you define someone as the other and you depersonalize them or dehumanize them, then it's okay to do whatever. And we've seen this actually talked about in relation to the separation of families at the southern border of the United States. You know, people saying, well, they're not us. You know, it's right. Okay, whatever's going right. on. And you see recently troops being brought in to set up barbed wire at legal crossings into the United States. And yeah. then the White House trying to say, well, unless you come across at a legal crossing point, you cannot seek asylum, although that a judge has put a stay on that. But I think you can't even imagine taking actions like that unless you have dehumanized the other. If you see the another person as a relative, and this is, I guess, the way in which, you know, when I've worked with people on issues of harmlessness and being conscious in this area, one of the helpful things to me is, you know, when you're looking at someone, think of them as your first cousin, you know, as your sister, as your brother. It's interesting that spiritual traditions call people to do this, and yet we have a large swath of persons who identify themselves as religious who seem quite willing to engage in this objectification of the other. And yes. then, you know, what you described is what follows in terms of behavior.
And you sense that within a lot of that, there is simply a fear a fear of not enough, a fear of standing, of this is my ground. I don't want to give anything up, you know? And so I think that also is a force that, that manipulation and fear go along very well. And I also think it takes a certain, when we speak of awareness, it takes a certain self-awareness. And I believe there's also safety in numbers. And so it's easy, you know, as you say, that person is different, it puts you in the group that is saying that, which makes you feel safe. And when you're pandering fear, you know, and this idea of safety in numbers feels good. And so it becomes very attractive. So it's cooperation within, you know, these very defined groups, but really ignoring the ways in which that divisiveness affects the whole.
Yeah. Well, what I find interesting is, and I think, you know, we know that there are crowd dynamics. You know, we know that there are bystander syndromes, you know, where you don't act if there's a certain number of people around that you think could take action. We know, you know, we look at crowds at sports events, you know, or other big events where violence begins to occur. But what I find intriguing, and I don't know the explanation of this, is you can have people who will react out of fear, out of wanting to feel safe. And so rhetoric around, you know, basically the enemy is coming, the enemy is coming. They're going to, you know, swamp you. They're going to do you out of whatever you have. That attracts people to, you know, that kind of, we've got to be protective. And yet those same people can be in a situation like a wildfire in California and be confronted with somebody that they don't know who might even be of that same of a different ethnic background, and yet in that moment of emergency they will reach out a helping hand.
Yeah.
So it's maybe it has to do with that when we relate to people on a person-to-person basis, we are better able to see the humanity, to see the commonality. It's when we refer to people in groups that they become anonymous, and then we're able to objectify them.
And it's a division of the heart and the head. You know, we've talked about illusion, and it is forming ideas in your mind that then create barriers between another. But when you're face to face with someone, when you're in front of someone, the chance that you will connect heart to heart, you know, I mean, it's actually an electromagnetic waves. You know, there is an electromagnetism that happens. It's energetic. The chances of you connecting and feeling connected and being willing to help or receive help are just far greater than when you're locked in a thought form that is telling you that somebody else is coming to get you. As an abstract, if you're around like-minded people, it's easy to objectify then. And then if you see them, that thought form that you've created about the invaders, you know, will take precedence. You know, that will actually then tincture your emotions of fear or aggression, and your actions will follow. So indeed, and it's what you say about seeing another, being face to face, you know, really experiencing another with your eyes. There's so much about looking another in the eyes. You know, it's the window to the soul, right, where it knows no division. But it is really about seeing another, even if it's just starting by looking at another and trying to do it without judgment, right? You'll find that we've certainly got more in common than we do differences, for sure. Mm-hmm. I remember
there was
Oh, go on, go on.
there was a program on the news a while ago. I think it was after the incidents in Charlottesville, and the dialogue around white nationalism and the kind of hatred that was being spewed there, and they had a news program about someone who was trying to help people move away from that dynamic. And it was all based on meeting real people.
Yeah.
Like meeting the mother of the woman who was killed in that event, you know, and seeing that these are real people with the same issues, the same hopes, the same dreams, the same concerns. And I have to tell you that one of my concerns about the ramp up of social media is that increasingly we're dealing with people supposedly in a friendly environment, but we're not actually interacting with them individually. We're interacting with them through technology, and that creates a certain kind of distance that I think can lend itself then to what you were describing.
Yes, subjective. You know, we see them subjectively, actually. Indeed. Mm-hmm. Dorothy, we're at another break, so we're going to continue this very interesting conversation just after these words.
Are you your story? Or can you change your story? Can you change what you believe to be true about yourself and your circumstances as part of your healing journey? What if you were to change your expectations? What if you were to invite ease and cooperation into every day and then step back and see what happens? It might just be easier. I'm Megan Edge, and I hope that you'll join me on my new radio show, Playing on the Edge, Radical Change with Ease, with my co-host, Dr. Pat, on Transformation Talk Radio. I look forward to seeing you there.
Want to find out more about Megan Edge? Visit her website at meganedge.ca.
Hi, I'm Steve Kramer of Spirit Fire Radio, and I believe that meditation changes everything. It leads us in the direction of greater well-being, and that's a fact. I struggled with meditation for years. I understood the principles, but I found it hard to incorporate them into my everyday life. Spirit Fire's meditation practice changed that. It's called the Practice of Living Awareness, and it's taught in 14 steps. These are 14 tools that I can use in any moment, on and off the cushion. Steps like smile, flow, and ground of being support my clarity of mind while I'm navigating the ups and downs of modern life. That's why it's called the Practice of Living Awareness. If you'd like to add meditation to your daily experience, the Practice of Living Awareness is free, online, and it's suited for any level of practitioner. Visit spiritfire.com for more information. And be sure to check out Spirit Fire's meditation retreats in Western Massachusetts. It's all there at spiritfire.com. Welcome back, listeners. Dorothy, one thing I've just been dying to mention that after I pondered cooperation and this idea of when do we cooperate, and I thought of a riptide, and I thought one time we know to cooperate is when we're caught in a riptide. You know, anybody who's tried to swim out of a riptide realizes, forget it, it's just not going to work. It takes so much energy. And that when you're in a riptide, you've just got to cooperate with the momentum, and it will circle you back around until you've got a chance then to act in a way that will take you out of the riptide. So there's so much there, even mm-hmm. as we were talking before about people who almost get caught in a riptide of certain views and are moved, you know, that it's almost as if it would take too much energy to get out of this momentum. So, mm-hmm. you know, there's a time to cooperate, but then realizing, now it's time for me to have a swim in a different direction and get myself to ground, right? So it's awareness of when we cooperate and when we don't cooperate, or at least when we move away from the momentum that we've been cooperating that no longer is going to serve us, right?
That's true. And we can also, I think there's another distinction that can be interesting, and that is between cooperating because of conforming. And you were, you know, when you were talking about people going along with a group think, yeah, that's the kind of conformance. Or we cooperate out of free choice. We say, this aligns with my values. This is what I want to be doing. And so so I make this choice.
Right, right.
I think it's also important to recognize, though, that when we make a choice, that there are certain situations in which we hold a lot of power. I don't know about you, but over my life, I've been in a number of group situations where the decision was to cooperate through consensus. You know, that we would only move forward when everybody was in agreement. And that's great. I mean, it creates a wonderful dynamic. However, it just takes one person saying, no, I don't agree. And especially if that person doesn't offer any alternatives or try to negotiate something that will work for everyone, it's a real showstopper.
And it can take time. You know, you can imagine for you all to create that common ground where you all are willing to stand on that common ground and say, as a group, we have come to this consensus. That can take a lot of time and a lot of concessions at times. It makes me think of deliberating juries. You know, I don't know if you've ever I've never been in that situation of being in a jury that has to go deliberate and come to a common, you know.
I've been on three.
Wow. And yeah, how does that feel in terms of cooperation?
Well, it's really interesting that the case that that stands out the most for me was one where I was pretty sure the person who was bringing the case, who said was saying that his accountant basically had cheated him out of a lot of money, and I believed him, and I thought that he was due some compensation, but 10 people in the room just wanted to get out of there, and they just wanted to say, no, you know, it's let's just take an easy decision. And then there was one other person besides myself. He'd been sitting there listening, and he had his chair kind of leaned back. And then I just remember he brought his chair down, and he said, look it. He said he was a farmer. He said, I have to trust my accountant. I can't be monitoring him all the time. I hire him for his professional expertise. And if he doesn't do what he was supposed to do, he is the one that has to be held accountable. And he was able then to help change the narrative, and we ended up siding with the person against the accountant. But if that other, I couldn't do it by myself, just one person.
And
but
so
when there were two of us,
cooperated with you.
Yeah, exactly.
So many wonderful, there are so many highlights to that story. And one of them is that cooperation builds trust and respect. You know, that is a very important aspect, and to know that that is the result just helps, you know, put the effort in, but it also helps one, you know, who might be reluctant, as these people where they just wanted to go home. And so I think that's a very important time in which we can find ourselves cooperating, is when it's just easy, when we're lazy, when we don't want to do the work, when we don't want to.
Right.
You know, when actually we don't want to be responsible sometimes, or even ethical sometimes. And that, again, is that just getting in the momentum. So when it's easy, it's easiest for us just to, you say this and I'm going to cooperate because I just want this to move on. Well, you know, that's not always appropriate or ethical, right? Or one's duty.
And what you're raising, Steve, I think is a really important point, which is that cooperation from a certain perspective, cooperation is neutral, right? It's a dynamic of how we are together. And it can be cooperation for good, or it can be cooperation for harm. And just because we're cooperating with people doesn't mean that we are doing the ethical thing.
Right, or the altruistic thing. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but there is a very interesting TED Talk. I love when we've got these topics, they seem to come up that are so apropos to what we're talking about. And there's a political theorist that's on this past week's TED Talks, and her name is Teresa Bejan. And she talks about civility as a form of cooperation, and actually that civility is sometimes not actually cooperating, because people will use civility as in the way that we're talking about, just to make things pass, just to be nice. And I have I'd love to read a little bit of the transcript from this, because I find it so interesting, if that's okay. She says, what exactly is civility? Well, to start, it is not the same thing as being respectful or polite, because we need civility precisely when we're dealing with those people that we find it the most difficult or maybe even impossible to respect. Similarly, being civil can't be the same as being nice, because being nice means not telling people what you really think about them or their wrong views. No, being civil means speaking your mind, but to your opponent's face, not behind her back. Civility is having the courage to make yourself disagreeable and to stay that way, but to do so while staying in the room. So I find that so interesting. I find that, it's basically what we were talking about earlier, that we can cooperate by speaking our mind, and it is in our own self-interest to do that. You know, if we find that somebody's view is wrong or unethical or maybe even evil, that it is actually altruistic and in our self-interest and in this self-interest of many, many of us all, to speak one's mind and do that face to face, so that you can share ideas, so that you can either halt that wrong view and perhaps have an influence on writing it. Yeah.
Well, yeah, I would agree with part of that, but I do not agree with regard to respectful. I think we have it in the Universal Declaration of Human Rights that people deserve respect and to be treated with dignity, whether we agree with them or not. And that, to me, is what the lack of civility right now in political discourse is all about, is not behaving in a respectful manner. You can respectfully disagree.
Yeah.
So I think I would agree that you don't have to be polite, but you do need to respect that somebody else has a different perspective than yours.
Yes.
And then stand firm in your own.
And not just being civil to let it slide, I think is what she is saying, that we can be civil and disagree. But I do agree, yeah, saying that maybe even impossible to respect, that there should always be that common denominator of respect, because without it you'll go nowhere. I would agree with you there.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and I think, you know, you mentioned the term altruism, and I think that's another interesting aspect of cooperation, which is helping someone without any expectation of getting something back.
Yeah.
That, to me, is what cooperation as altruism is all about. And actually, I think, you know, you've referred to some of these studies before, Steve. We're actually hardwired for cooperation.
Yeah.
It's pleasurable.
Totally. To be altruistic. Yeah, to give. The areas of our brain, we release serotonin and dopamine. We get that reward buzz when we help another. And actually, when we take for ourselves, it actually feeds areas of the brain that actually cut us off from another and make us subjective. It's really thinking about ourselves alone, and it cuts off those areas of the brain where we see the reward in that action. So if we really felt into it, we'd realize that altruism is not only natural to us, but it feels good. It could be a drug of sorts, a very healthy one.
Well, but we should hasten to add that one can condition oneself in a different direction. There are people who have, if you want to put it this way, burned out that hardwiring.
Yeah.
Where what gives them pleasure is doing in somebody else, is getting the better of somebody else, rather than cooperating and being helpful.
I remember a few shows back saying that I was so taken by somebody's observation of that they used to think that the opposite of spirituality was materialism. And they've come to realize, especially in this day and age, that the opposite of spirituality is actually self-centeredness. And I would take that even further and say megalomania or narcissism, because we see it so much these days, and as you talk about social media, it does seem to feed those aspects of the brain that make us so critical, judgmental, and put ourselves in opposition to another. And it all seems to be for, you know, serving oneself, serving one's ego, and that's, there's something in that about not wanting to cooperate, because it draws that line and says, I'm here and you're there. Definitely, I see that as, the opposite of spirituality. Dorothy, we're already at another break. So when we come back, we're going to continue this wonderful conversation. Listeners, stay tuned.
To find answers to life's questions, you need to look within yourself. Dr. Glenna Rice brings your questionable conversations on Transformation Talk Radio each month. Tune in each month for insight into how you can live up to your full potential. Dr. Glenna is a physical therapist, certified Access Consciousness, and Access Body Class Facilitator. How does it get any better than this? For more information on Dr. Glenna Rice and her work, visit glennarice.com.
Wow. Hey, everyone. Welcome. Welcome to the Dr. Pat Show. This is Talk Radio to Thrive By. I'm telling you, I got to pinch myself some days, because when each of us gets called to do something that we so not thought was in our wheelhouse to do for a purpose that's so much greater than us, we get to show up and shine.
If you would like to show up and shine on the Dr. Pat Show as a co-host or sponsor, send us an email to inspire@thedrpatshow.com.
Love Living Radio Ignite Your Whole Being with Emily Perkins is a show for those looking to explore the sparkling magnificence of their inner selves. Tune in every second and fourth Wednesday at 4 p.m. Pacific as Emily sheds a radiant light of love on the beauty and power that resides within you. Discussing love in all its forms through conversations that provoke awareness, curiosity, and expansion, Emily shares the unlimited power of love. For more information or to listen to this show, visit lovelivingholistics.com.
Practice living in wholeness with the Body Tune-Up. 6 classes for $89 designed for radical self-healing and self-regeneration. Heal the deepest root of any challenge. The mental body was programmed in negativity, not good enough. Separate from source, you're too much, you'll never make it. The emotional body holds all the pain and trauma of emotional suppression, all the pain from this life and life's past. The spiritual body is the place you connect with your higher power, your higher self, with the image and likeness of the One. The physical body houses and expresses the other three bodies every day. Go to CorneliaStephanie.com. Evolve, become a practitioner. We need to heal, integrate, and bring into wholeness and harmony the physical body, addressing all the other bodies in order to live in our true, authentic nature.
Living Lighter Radio with Jason and Patricia. We have an ecosystem approach to your life. Tune in weekly every Monday at 1 p.m. Pacific on Transformation Talk Radio as we, Jason and Patricia, discuss what's truly holding you back. We offer you the tools you need to reach your goals and at the same time be living lighter. For more information about Living Lighter, visit www.livinglighter.org.
Thank you. Welcome back, listeners, to Spirit Fire Radio, as Dorothy and I continue this discussion on cooperation. Dorothy, I know my family is traveling right now in lots of Thanksgiving traffic to make their way into snowy New England. And I always think of cooperation when I'm driving, and you see when everybody's going, you know, perhaps 65, and somebody puts on the brakes, and then everybody puts on the brakes, and all of the traffic slows down. And if you're that one that doesn't put on the brakes, but just gently allows you to sort of smoothly maintain your speed, that sort of hiccup that jars people, it alleviates. That comes to mind with as like a really wonderful cooperation. I'm often the one that tries to just not put the brake on, but slow down. And it makes me think of grace. There's a grace to that of like being in a flow of cooperating, of seeing what's necessary, and just being in a flow so that, you know, everybody can move along safely and with ease.
It's a lovely image, Steve. It's a lovely image. I want to, there's another term that we referred to before the break that I want to come back to, and that's harmlessness. Behaving in a manner that does not generate harm. And we could go further than that and say, but in fact, edifies and uplifts the other person. And I think that, you know, when we're thinking ultimately about cooperation in terms of how we work together, that is very much the feel that we want. And you were talking about opposites, the opposites of spirituality. There's another opposite that I think is interesting to just fit in here, and that is the opposite of joy is criticism.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And by that I mean not the feedback that we seek and ask for, but the unsolicited criticism of what we're doing or thinking.
And you can feel that. You can feel with criticism the divisiveness and even in a way manipulation, because you are injecting a force into a situation that will sway it in a way that somebody certainly didn't ask for, right? And that the cooperation has no part of there. And so I going back to the harmlessness, you know, and joy, love putting those two together, harmlessness and joy. But if you, I have found, you know, you certainly have graced my psyche with that word harmlessness being at the forefront of my psyche so much. And I find that when you really make that an intention, even in the morning, to say, today I'm going to be harmless. I am not going to generate harm in any way, and that is with my thoughts, my actions, my words, my deeds, and realizing that criticism is a form of harm, but it makes you by default cooperative, because you generally will be in this joyous, for me at times, you will be in the flow and you find yourself helping situations smooth out. You find yourself generous. You find yourself the one who's creating common ground, putting people at ease. So, you know, those two really do go together, I find, harmlessness and cooperation. I find that we can wrap our heads around perhaps one or the other. They really do feed one another and support each other in such a beautiful way. So glad that you brought that up.
Yeah, and there's a related concept. You know, I mentioned the issue of free choice earlier. There's an aspect of cooperation that involves setting limits on ourselves. It's part of the whole concept of the social contract, right, that we agree that we won't just do whatever we want to impulsively at whatever time, but that we will we will willingly subscribe to certain limits in order for us to live cooperatively together, in order for us to work together in a way that is positive. So we create these boundaries that are self-imposed. So I say, well, you know, I'm not going to you know, raise a ruckus at 2 o'clock in the morning and wake the whole neighborhood. I'm going to be thoughtful and do that during the day when it doesn't disturb people's sleep. That kind of thing, that kind of limitation that we place on ourselves in order to work cooperatively together.
And even making choices where you are purchasing food that has been raised responsibly. You know, if you mm-hmm. eat meat, if you, you know, personally, I would love ethically to be a vegan, but my blood type, I need animal protein. I go bonkers mm-hmm. without. So to make a choice and to say, well, it may cost money, but I'm willing to sacrifice in that way to eat organically or to eat, you know, animals that have been raised with kindness and with care mm-hmm. and with some awareness of their well-being. So yeah, I would agree for sure that so important. I think of, you know, responsibility is the keynote of the soul that is often said in esoteric circles. And it's that willingness to take responsibility so that others can not only others, but so that the whole group evolves, the whole group moves forward. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And we see this particularly in terms of, I mean, you mentioned, you know, purchasing responsibly. The whole, if we look at the whole, where we most affect each other, it's in how we interact with the world around us in terms of actions that contribute to climate change, that contribute to the degradation of the environment, that contribute to the wiping out of other species. You know, being aware that we are part of a whole, it's a whole that works well as long as we all cooperate.
Beautiful way to end our show today. We've got to wrap it up. And indeed, in light of, you know, these fires and these, you know, so we see Mother Earth really trying to let us know that we are indeed not cooperating as best we could. So making those responsible choices and being thankful this week of Thanksgiving for this, you know, this platform, this stage, this beautiful being that we live upon, Mother Earth. Dorothy, wonderful show. Great gratitude and thanks to you, as always, for what you bring to the table. Thanksgiving table. There you go.
Yeah. Well, that's. This has been a really interesting discussion, Steve, and I look forward to next week when we have our fourth and final discussion on cooperation.
Yes, listeners, join us. We're going to talk about ways to strengthen, you know, your cooperation muscles. So it's going to be a great show. Lots of very practical pointers. So we hope you'll join us. Have a great Thanksgiving. You too, Dorothy. Ciao.
Take care.
Thank you for listening to Spirit Fire Radio. Tune in each Wednesday at 9 a.m. Pacific, 12 noon Eastern for your weekly guide to purposeful living and practical spirituality. Join hosts Steve Kramer and Dorothy Riddle as they shine the light on universal spiritual principles and uncover ways that ageless wisdom can guide you in cultivating consciousness in your everyday life. Add to your awareness with Spirit Fire Radio. To learn more, visit spiritfireradio.com.